Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 12th, 2024. It has been 3,728 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 52 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 49 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Thursday and Friday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are only minor map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission – the truth. Because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment, with only small changes from yesterday. If you want to skip ahead, it won't hurt my feelings. I won't even know. 1. Ukraine's supply of air defense munitions is in a catastrophic state, preventing the proper defense of its airspace. 2. United States House Speaker Mike Johnson has clearly signaled he will not advance any aid package for Ukraine to a vote, and we maintain that military aid to Ukraine has ended unless there is a change in political leadership. 3. Without the restoration of air defense, Ukrainian troops will be forced to continue to withdraw from areas the Russian aerospace forces target for intense bombardment. 4. Based on multiple reports that the United States has set multiple restrictions on what military equipment can be provided and how it can be used due to a misguided fear of a Russian tactical nuclear strike, the world is caught in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 5. Russian forces continue to set conditions for the capture of Chasiv Yar, regardless of cost. 6. Russia is also setting conditions in 2 additional operational areas for future wider attacks. But we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations this summer. 7. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 8. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. Inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 9. The continued attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine, and the situation is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 10. We maintain that the drone strikes on the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant were Russian false flag operations to deter continued Western assistance, as Ukraine derives no military or geopolitical benefits from the attacks. But Russia does. We begin today's report in the Donbas, starting in northeastern Donetsk Oblast and the Siversk area of Operation Oryo. Russian forces made another attempt to occupy trenches southwest of Zolotarivka in the direction of Verkhnyokamenske, suffered losses and retreated. To the south, Russian attempts to advance in the direction of Vyimka were also unsuccessful. In the Soledar area, Russian troops continued to probe Ukrainian defenses south of Rozdolivka, with no change in the situation. The heaviest fighting in Ukraine was in the Kostyantynivka area. Ukrainian sources reported that fighting continued in Bogdanivka, but the situation was very difficult. Ukrainian forces were unable to push Russian troops out of the southern tip of the settlement, despite heavy artillery strikes on the approaches from the T-506 highway. Russian attempts to advance into Chasiv Yar continue to be unsuccessful due to unfavorable terrain and the exceptional work of the Ukrainian armed forces. Fighting was concentrated in Ivanivske and the ridge to the north. South of Bakhmut, positional fighting continued near Klishivka, with no change in the situation. The VKS, Russian Aerospace Forces, bombed Kostyantynivka, killing 3 and wounding 2. Civilian infrastructure, the city administration, and apartment buildings were targeted. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, the intensity of fighting remains reduced in the Avdiivka AO, but will almost certainly increase in the next 3 days. Russian forces made a new attempt to advance on Novokolonova from the east, but did not make new territorial gains. Fighting continued on the western edges of Berdychi, with Russian forces making a small advance north of the village. Russian sources claimed fighting continued in Semenivka, and Russian troops continued their attempts to advance on Umanske. The Russian Ministry of Defense, Armored, reported fighting in Pervomayske, while the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, GSAFU, reported that an attack in the area of Netailove, which is west of Pervomayske, was repulsed. We made no changes to the map. In our assessment, neither combatant has been able to establish military control in western Pervomayske and continue to trade control of the area. Fighting continued in the Vuhledar AO on the southeastern edge of Krasnohorivka and in Novomikhailivka, with no change in the situation. Russian forces continued their subordinate attacks in the Staromlinivka AO. A Ukrainian counterattack south of Urozhaine pushed Russian troops back to the Mokry Yaly River on the northern edge of Zavidne Bazhanye. The map was adjusted. Fighting also continued west and northwest of Staromayorske, with no change in the situation. In Zaporizhia Oblast, Russian assaults continued in the Orikhiv AO, but the intensity dropped. Two Russian Ural trucks that had been crudely up-armored were used for a direct assault on Ukrainian positions in Robotyne. Both vehicles were destroyed just past the trenches that were part of the Surovikin line near Novoprokopivka, with the dismounts scattering. The surviving Russian forces were eliminated by first-person one-way drones and drone-dropped IEDs. The International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, provided an update on the status of the Zaporizhia Nuclear Power Plant, ZNPP, after the Board of Governors met to discuss recent drone strikes on the facility. Representatives from the 35-nation board attended the meeting, including delegates from Russia and Ukraine. Director General Rafael Mariano Grossi will brief the UN Security Council on Monday. Grossi said that, quote, "no one can conceivably benefit or gain any military or political advantage by attacking ZNPP," and warned that the war was becoming, quote, "unconscionably more dangerous through further attacks." The IAEA monitors at ZNPP reported they continue to hear the sound of military action frequently, including outgoing artillery fire from near the power plant. In the days before the board meeting, Russian occupiers permitted inspectors to access all 6 main control rooms, the off-site radiation monitoring laboratory, and the wastewater storage facility. Inspectors were blocked from parts of Turbine Hall 2, where Russian military equipment is known to be stored. Grossi called for, quote, "prompt and unrestricted access to all areas that are important for nuclear safety and security" at ZNPP. Rosatom intends to bring Reactor 4 to cold shutdown starting on April the 12th, with the winter heating season ending. The process of wastewater will be done by portable diesel boilers that were installed in late 2023. The 330 kV connection that Russia knocked out when shelling the Nikopol rayon of Dnipropetrovsk Oblast last week has been reconnected. Grossi did not address the latest round of attacks on Ukraine's electrical infrastructure and the increasing risk of other nuclear power plants in Ukraine losing their external power connections. Here is my theater-wide update. On the night of April the 11th and the 12th, Ukrainian air defenses were able to shoot down 16 of 17 Shahed-136 one-way drones launched from occupied Crimea. The missiles that struck the Tripilska thermal power plant in Kyiv were Kh-69 subsonic cruise missiles. Russia claims that the Kh-69 uses stealth technology, and we had previously assessed, based on its design and construction, that was unlikely. The missile has a reported range of 290, 300 or 400 km, with the ones that struck Kyiv fired from almost 400 km away. The challenge that the new missile presents to Ukraine is 5 different multirole aircraft can launch it, including the Su-30, Su-34, Su-35 and the MiG-31. Additionally, the cruise missile was specifically designed for the Su-57 Felon, but Russia has been unable to equip an operational squadron with serially produced aircraft. In a worrying sign that Russia may be preparing for another false flag, members of the Ministry of Internal Affairs in the Belgorod region have been ordered to carry chemical, biological, radiological and nuclear seaborne equipment with them at all times. Russia claims that on April the 8th, Ukraine used Adamsite, a World War I chemical weapon, near Klishivka. Adamsite, also known as 10-chloro-5, is an aerosol used for crowd control that is similar to tear gas but with milder symptoms that last longer. It has been considered obsolete for decades and is not banned by the Chemical Weapons Convention. Two countries still produce the crowd control chemical, North Korea and Venezuela, both allies of Moscow. Ukraine and Latvia signed a mutual security agreement. The Baltic nation on the edge of the Russian frontier agreed to provide 0.25% of its GDP annually in military aid to Ukraine and assistance in demining drones, cyber warfare defense, and supporting NATO accession. A year after Norway's request was submitted to the United States Department of State, Washington approved the transfer of 22 F-16 fighters to Ukraine. The transfer will include spare parts, engines, flight simulators, and auxiliary equipment for ground support. 12 of the plates are airworthy, and no date on when the transfer will happen was given. The Netherlands will allocate another $440 million in aid to Ukraine, in addition to its earlier pledge, and Lithuania sent a new military aid package to Ukraine, which included anti-drone systems, generators, and other materials. In Washington, one more congressperson signed Discharge Petition 9. Another 24 signatures are required to force a floor vote. We updated the table of heavy military equipment losses for Russia and Ukraine using information from the Oryx database. You can access the information by becoming a patron. For as little as $5 a month, you get access to our almost daily situation reports, flash reports, and other news coverage. There is more information in the podcast description. It's time to talk about the land of Mobiks, mobilization and Mir. In the Orenburg region, flooding continued and has reached historic levels in Orenburg while reaching its peak in Orsk. While Russia has not started blocking the internet and social media in the region, there has been a significant drop in coverage. Autocrat Vladimir Putin sent the Minister of Emergency Situations to the region, who toured the damage from an amphibious vehicle with approximately 30 other officials, all in dress uniforms. Some residents mocked the minister as he passed, and he didn't even throw out rolls of paper towels. The Ministry of Internal Affairs shared another video showing a group of undocumented immigrants being told that if they did not enlist in the Russian Federation Armed Forces, they would be deported and blocked from ever returning. There have been widespread reports of undocumented workers being forced into the military, and the Putin regime is no longer hiding their efforts. Could Russian doom posting be coming back? Our favorite FSB colonel, convicted war criminal, convicted Russian criminal, failed Mobik and former Little Green Man Igor Strelkov-Girkin has appealed his sentence for extremism and requested to be transferred to a penal unit. Girkin's lawyer Igor Molokhov explained that because the former angry patriot has been convicted of extremism, he cannot volunteer to fight. A court hearing to appeal his conviction is scheduled for May 15th. Before I start the geopolitics section, I have an errors and omissions. Yesterday I told you that Annalena Baerbock is the Minister of Defense of Germany. Baerbock is the Federal Minister of Foreign Affairs of Germany. Due to the widespread missile attack, the script was sent to me very late, and the writing team only skimmed the final version. David said this is on him, and he thanks you and a sharp-eyed reader for catching the mistake. All members of our team are doing their best while working under stress, and we are grateful for your understanding. In a geopolitical surprise, the Prime Minister of Slovakia, Robert Fico, declared his full support for Ukraine and that his country, quote, holds our fists for you. Fico, who was perceived as being tightly aligned with the Kremlin, said that Slovakia would not create obstacles for Ukrainian EU accession, adding, quote, the use of Russian force in Ukraine is a violation of international agreements. Ukraine needs help and solidarity. In late 2023, Fico lifted the ban on companies selling military equipment to Ukraine that he first implemented, partially due to economic pressure. On Tuesday, White House National Security Council advisor Jake Sullivan cancelled his face-to-face meeting with the British Secretary of State Lord David Cameron. The two talked by phone, with Cameron appealing for the US to restart providing military aid to Ukraine. It is unclear why Sullivan changed the format at the last minute. Cameron also met with presumptive Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, telling the former president that territorial concessions by Ukraine will not stop Putin's war of aggression. French Foreign Minister Stéphane Séjourné said that Paris was no longer interested in having further discussions with their Russian counterparts, writing, quote, statements from Russian officials are lies, therefore the continuation of the dialogue with Russia does not correspond to the interests of France. The Romanian government is considering a change in their national laws, which would allow the deployment of their troops to other countries to protect its citizens abroad. Moscow was unhappy about the potential change and accused Romania of preparing to annex Moldova, where hundreds of thousands of Romanian nationals live. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is traveling to China and will meet with President Xi Jinping on April 16 as part of a four-day diplomatic visit. Scholz will discuss the Russia-Ukraine war and how Beijing can influence Russia. At the beginning of the week, a Russian ship that left St. Petersburg and was bound for the United States suffered an engine failure and had to dock in the German port of Rostock. The ship's manifest claimed the cargo was enriched uranium, which is not sanctioned. When customs officials inspected the vessel, they also found it carried birchwood timber from Russia, which is sanctioned. The ship has been detained, with the Russian company that owns the vessel filing a protest. On April 2, South Korea sanctioned two Russian vessels involved in carrying military supplies from North Korea to Russia, drawing a rebuke from Moscow. The next day, the South Korean Navy seized the DE near the South Korean city of Yeosu. The cargo ship had left North Korea and is suspected of carrying weapons and munitions. There has been no further update on the status of the vessel, its 13 crew members, or the cargo. AIS data showed that the DE was originally bound for Vladivostok, Russia, and is anchored in a quarantine area near the South Korean port of Busan. And that's what we know. Please join me again on Monday, and hopefully our studio will still have power. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.